Good morning, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert Dikedi and Emmanuel Coffey. Good morning, counsel.
Counsel, good morning. How are you today?
I am doing well. Let's start with a short disclaimer. Everything that we say, any opinion that we express in this episode is our opinion only and does not impart to our employers. And also, we do not provide legal advice in these programs. Anything you do here should be checked with your own attorney. Thank you. So, counsel, good morning. I know today is going to be a very excited program. We are going on the other side of the world to actually talk to a friend of ours who is also a practicing attorney. And so I will let you do some intro. And of course, this is IP Breakfast. I have my coffee and I did my 3 miles this morning.
I was just about to ask if you have your coffee already.
Yes, not only have my coffee, but also put in my 3 miles.
Ah, well, I didn't put in 3 miles, but I did put a few, 1 mile, you know?
So. Well, you know, counsel, having to, good health is not just about walking. It's also about having good sleep. So if you are sleeping, that's also a good thing.
Yes, sir. That's part of it all. It's a holistic whole type of, it's a whole package, right? It's not, you have to have all the different aspects of it in order to have the complete package.
Yes, obviously. And we do want our audience to not only be, you know, healthy in the body, but we want them to be healthy in the mind. And we want them to be well connected and their mind is forever expanding in the world of intellectual property and what it is. And how to use it and how to make use of it to create wealth, build businesses, and create jobs for others. There's so many things that we want, but the you is a big factor in this whole equation, right? It's like you as the co-host and our guest today, you as the audience who's listening to this. Without you, it doesn't happen, right?
So. Right. And in that vein, we welcome everyone from around the world or wherever, in whatever time they may be listening. So long as they are having their coffee, right?
Yes, you know, coffee is always good. It's a good thing. So, so we've been having this conversation regarding intellectual property. We went to the basics of intellectual property, trying to bring along an audience that is that. Have been familiar with what intellectual property is. You know, we went to the patents, the trademark, the copyright, the trade secrets. You know, we start talking about the international system. We talk about, you know, after you get these rights, what that means, whether you get what you can do with them. So we've been putting a lot of ideas out there to our audience. And if you have not listen to this podcast before, we do invite you to go back and listen to the previous session, because that will also help you to understand this episode today, because this episode will focus on international. In particular, we're going to the other side of the world today to our friend Om Prakash Singeri, and I know I pronounced his name wrong, but he will correct me later. Who is in India right now? So this is a complete a complete to actually have Om Prakash coming to our podcast to expand our program, the breadth of the program, and to bring this perspective of international to our audience and reach their mind on this is not just something that happens in one location, it happens throughout the world. So, counsel, I'll let you introduce Mr. Wangeri.
Okay, yeah, he's on the line with us. Before I I introduce him, I'd like to just mention that this podcast are heard on many platforms, including LinkedIn, and you can also get a copy on the website www.coffeelaw.com, just in case if you don't have one readily available. They are archived, so you can go to the ones that were recorded prior to this one. Good morning, Mr. Sengui. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. So it is evening here in India, while we do have coffee in evening as well.
I like that. And what time is it in India right now?
Yeah, this is, as I told you, it's a little bit of raining here. We just finished a little festivity, small festivity season. And yesterday we completed a small festivity, and today it has been raining here. And of course, I do have my evening coffee with me. So it's so nice that, you know, all across the world, we are connecting on the same coffee.
On the same coffee. And we also have with us our co-host, attorney Albert Dikeri. He's also joining us. Now, I know you've been practicing for quite some time, and your breadth of experience is really deep. Can you briefly introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, so we have been working, practicing IP law in India past 20 years, and we have done, especially with respect to Indian patent practices concerned, we have filed nearly thousands of patent applications, and we are also doing a couple of cases against infringements in various courts. Besides this, our clients have been MNCs and startups, universities. The top application filing entities that are listed by the patent journal are some of our clients. So that way we have been representing almost all kind of applicants, or the spectrum of the inventors and intellectual property owners. We have been representing all of them, most of them, university, MNCs, startups, small scale industries, individuals from South Africa and China, Europe. So we have been representing almost all people from village. The person who did not have, I would like to mention this just to give you a kind of the scenario in India. A person village where there was no electricity, there is no internet, there is no way he could connect to anyone outside, has invented, and we got a patent granted for him in India. So we have got all spectrum of people, we have worked for that. Besides this, I also would like to mention that our global exposure also is that we have been, I was working for a US law firms for filing patents and prosecuting and then infringement analysis and things like that. I did it for almost 10 years, and subsequently I was also in-house counsel for Connexion Systems USA for 2 years. So we were handling many portfolio building processes there. So my experience comes from all these things, and then we are able to use it effectively to give benefits to the clients. And also we have been teaching universities and other applicants as to how they should strategize their businesses. At the same time, we are also training. I have trained more than 100 patent agents in India who have been trained by me, and then they become their patent agents, patent attorneys, and they are practicing on their own in India. So this is how I just thought I would have to introduce myself so that you know the significance. You can appreciate.
Okay, great. Thank you. Counsel, take it away.
So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sengui. Did get a little feedback.
Sringeri, sorry. Sringeri.
Sringeri.
Yeah.
Okay, Sringeri.
You are more or less perfect.
Singery. So, yeah, thank you. So, let's talk about the different professionals in the IP world in India. Does it, so like I was saying, here we have the IP attorneys, we have the patent agents. I did hear you mention the patent agents. Our patent agents have to go to a test here. And then we have the trademark attorneys who are not necessarily considered, you know, the process of practicing intellectual property is different than somebody who's practicing patent, for example, here. Give us a sense of how it's structured in India.
Yeah, thank you. So at the outset, I would like to say that, you know, the practicing the recognition is pretty much similar to what you have said. In India also, any attorney, that is the person who has secured his JD, that is equivalent to JD. In India, it is called LLB degree. So law degree, basic law degree. So a person who has secured a law degree cannot practice patent, cannot practice before a controller of patents. To practice before a controller of patents, even if a person is an attorney or a law degree holder, has to take an examination, which is generally conducted every 2 years once, or as and when the controller deemed fit. So it, last time it was conducted 2 years back. Now it was scheduled, but it was postponed because of all these issues. So you have to pass through that particular examination to be recognized as Indian patent agents. So currently we have around 4,000 Indian patent agents, approximately. I'm not giving you an exact number. So approximately 4,000 patent agents are there in India. Only they can practice before controller of patents. No other attorneys or lawyers can practice before the controller of patents for the patents processes. Whereas for the trademark, for the design and the copyright, for other three aspects of IP, any lawyer, any person who has got a law degree and then registered for a bar council can practice and can represent for trademark, design and copyright. For patents, a person requirement is that he should have a technical background, technical degree, technical graduation. He should have a technical degree plus a patent agent examination should be completed with a 75% score.
Okay, so thank you for that answer. So so here in America, in the United States, intellectual property, you know, is becoming more prevalent than it was, you know, 50 years ago. It is said now that intellectual property is worth, compared to GDP, is about 33, don't quote me on the numbers, but it's about 33% or 36% of GDP. And mainly, I think that globally, I think there's a statistic that says really 80% of the society that we live in America work in IP somehow, right? There's a touch in IP where they work. What is the intellectual property sector represent in India?
Yeah, thank you. So in that particular aspect, I think we are even at the starting point. So we cannot even mention any percentage with respect to GDP, the quantum of the revenue that our patent is generating in India. So our number of, but it would make sense for me to compare with the growth and also the number of patent applications being filed, which will give some sense of the importance that Indian people put themselves into the patent aspects. So I just give you the number, so that gives you a kind of an idea as to what is happening in India. The first thing is that, you know, in US, I think when it comes to trademark, I think in US we have around 3 to 3.5 lakhs applications are being filed every year. And in India also, around the same number of applications are being filed, rather more, in fact. So Indian trademark application, number of Indian trademark applications are more when compared to number of trademark applications filed in India per annum, in US per annum. Whereas when it comes to patents, US, I think currently it is filing around 7 lakhs plus patent applications are being filed. Whereas in India, it is just 50,000 patent applications are being filed in India. And the designs and the copyrights are very small a number when it comes to US. So we with respect to the patents as such, we are very at a very starting point. And then this has been constantly maintained for past approximately 8 to 10 years. In the past 8 to 10 years, if I look at the data, it is around 40,000. In 10 years, it has increased by only 10,000, that is 55,000 applications. So there is not a very great amount of increase as what is happening with respect to the curve is not increasing rapidly when it compared to USA or as you compare with China. China has taken a very drastic increase in the filings. And whereas US also similarly, there is a very considerable quick rise in the number of filings. India rise is, there is a rise obviously, but it is not very significant when compared to other two countries. But when it, yeah.
Do you see, I mean, do you know in India whether you have an influx of outside filings? Like you do know in the United States we receive a lot of application from around the world as well as our own national filings.
Yes, yeah, we know that. See, in India, I think in US it is 50-50, the US residents number of application being filed, and then compared to the number of application filed by the foreigners is around 45 to 55% range. Whereas in India, it is 70% and 30%. 70% of applications, that is out of 55,000, 35,000 plus around that number is being filed by foreign applicants. Whereas only 15,000 to 20,000 of applications are being filed by Indian residents. What I mean is the national phase applications that is coming and being filed in India is more compared to the people of India filing their own applications. So the larger chunk is basically a foreign filing than Indian filing.
Awesome. So, counsel, you can answer at any time, but I do have a few more questions.
Okay.
When we look at the United States, and you know, for me, who's been an intellectual property for about 28 years now, and I'm still baffled by in very well educated circles when I talk about where I work, whether I say I'm at the patent office or if I say I'm in the IP sector, and people are like, what is IP and what is the patent office? And this is a start of what the disparity is going to be in why people are not taking advantage of that. And United States, you know, I would say from the last 28 years, I think now there's more people who are aware of intellectual property. But still, you find a sector that is not aware of it. How is that in India, and what do you think is attributed to that that lack of knowledge of the system and thus for them to take advantage of it?
Yeah, so there has been, in fact, we can say the lack of knowledge about intellectual property, and also the people did not appreciate the importance of this IP in their researches and their businesses initially. But in the past 3 years, I must say that at least in the past 5 years, there has been substantial government programs to bring awareness among the small scale industries, startups and individuals. And there are many programs have been released by the government for the financial aids for filing patents and things like that. So as far as the awareness has concerned, awareness is concerned, so I think in the past 3 years, it has substantially increased. But the filing is yet to pick up. I think I'm sure that, you know, in the coming year, the filing will pick up as because of the increase in the awareness, and also the government programs are reaching now because of this COVID. Again, there could be some problem, but in the past 3 to 4 years, the Indian government has placed a lot of importance, and then there are a lot of schemes to help startups and small scale industries, Indian small scale industries, and then university programs are also been introduced so that the universities can also file patent applications of their researchers which they are going to do, which they are doing. So this will find its implication, or it will reflect, it will transform into number of applications in the coming years. May not be in this year, in the coming years, I'm sure that there will be an increase by another 10 to 15,000 of applications to go up immediately. That is one thing. Plus, second thing, I would like to mention that the Indian government, the Indian law has made a provision for fast examination for startups, the women applicant, and small scale industries. So in any of these entities can make a request for examination, and then their patent gets granted within 1 year, which is started just 2 years from the past 2 years. This particular scheme has been started. So all these kind of schemes that has been started is certainly going to see some quick increase in the number of filings in the coming years.
Okay, well, thanks for this. For our audience, though, I think we'd like you to give us a sense of the international patent system. Patent being local, meaning that every country has jurisdiction on a patent, but there is an international patent system. For example, the WIPO, the World International Patent Organization. So can you give us a sense of how the international system works?
Yeah, thank you. So here, actually, you know, any person residing in any country outside India can file a patent application in India. There are two paths that can be selected. One is the Paris Convention, where if he has already filed a patent application in his country, in his or her country, within 1 year, he can cite the priority and file in India. The other route is PCT. If the person has filed a PCT application, then he can enter into the national phase in India after 31 months. In with respect to USA, it is 30 months. With respect to India, it is 31 months. So, apart from these two, a person in any country, of any country, any origin, can file in India directly without even filing anywhere else. That means without Paris Convention, without WIPO, if he wants to file in India alone, he can file in India as a foreign resident. So any resident anywhere on earth can file patent application in India, either directly or through Paris Conventions or through WIPO, that is PCT applications. These three has got different benefits. Paris Convention gives you 1 year so that you can adjust your business and then inventions and then file. PCT gives you initial examination to determine whether your idea is patentable or not. And then it will also give you kind of a search reports and then examination report to ascertain whether the idea that you have, your draft is accurate enough and things like that. And subsequently, after 31 months, you can file national phase in India. To file your address, to file a patent application in India, all you need is an address in India. As an individual, you can file directly without any attorneys. Subject to that, you have an address for communication in India. But most of the situation, it is not so. Person generally takes help of patent attorneys in India because that automatically serves as an address for communication in India. So any person who comes in, it's beneficial that they take the help of patent attorneys in India, and then either for drafting or filing and subsequently docketing and maintaining their applications, it is better that they take a help of an attorney and get application filed. So they can directly call the phone numbers of any attorney. It's already published. Just like in US, the Indian Patent Office lists every attorney's address, email, phone number, things like that. And it's not necessary that though India has been divided into four regions, we have a south region, north, east and west regions. There are four or five patent offices. A foreign applicant need not have to worry which region he has to select. He can select any region, and then he, his only question is that his best of whatever the attorney he wants to select, he can select and file it. Whereas for the Indian applicants, the region depends upon his address of communication or his where the applicant address is. If the applicant address is in south, then he will select south region. But foreigners, foreign applicant, region doesn't come into picture. The region is determined by the patent agent's address. So these are the three ways by which the foreign applicant can come in. If they come by PCT route, that is as a national phase, then they have a benefit of seeking express examination. Only a person entering into the national phase of PCT, India gives a benefit of seeking. That means he can opt for express examination. No other, if he comes by Paris Convention or if he directly files, then the express examination is not possible. Only
great.
Great.
Thank you for this answer. The time is kind of marching upon us. That's why I'm interested there. I have a final question before we conclude. Litigation here in the US is very, very expensive. What about India? How is it there?
Yeah, the litigations nowadays are picking up and people are filing lawsuits. And certainly when it comes to expensiveness, Indian litigation is not as expensive as in US, certainly. But here it has to be judicially, one has to select the proper, we have the attorneys, varying attorneys, so different attorneys charges differently in India, but the scale of, that is the range of charges are very, very different, very huge. So a person, there could be a easy going attorneys, and there could be a very costly, depending upon your seriousness of the matter, you can fight it at the court. But it, certainly it is 1/10 of the charges, that generally what is cost. But one has to worry about the timeline. So here the timeline is not as strict as in US.
Okay, thanks. Finally, before we leave, we wanted to ask you to chime in on here. As you know, in the US, we're getting ready for an election, and the Democrats have just elected their vice president, whose mother is from India. Do you, what parting words would you say? Do you have anything about Kamala Harris that you might want to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about their background, but we know that they are all coming from South Indian, and they have come from Chennai, Tamil Nadu area, which is very close by to us. And they're all brought up with a kind of a very good mindsets, and then their humanitarian aspects and other things are very, very good in my opinion, because the whatever they have been nurtured is very fundamental to the nature.
Okay, well, don't be a stranger to this to our audience, so we hope you can join us next time. Do you have any last words?
Yeah, I mean, it was very nice talking to all of you and to all the listeners. We certainly would like to be part of this kind of a discussion, and I'm available.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Mr. Sengari, can you give a contact info where audience can find you if they want to look for you on Twitter or LinkedIn?
Yeah, see, they can type my name, Om Prakash Sringeri. It's available on Google, but my number is 9448356142. 9448356142, Indian number. So, or they can even mail me at omprakash@omspatentservices. So, I will be available. So, my name, if you type it, you will get it on the Google itself.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. As we always, the time goes fast as we're having fun doing our IP breakfast with coffee. unfortunately, the time is gone. I don't know where it went, but we're having fun. Hope you enjoy this session. You can always find me on Twitter at ADECADY. At ADECADY, that's on Twitter. And Emmanuel, take it away.
Yes, you can find me at Coffee Law LLC. That's on Twitter, or www.coffeelaw.com. It was a pleasure having you today. And until we see you next time, be well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Good afternoon, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert DeCady and Emmanuel Coffey. Let's start with a disclaimer. Every opinion that we express in this program is our opinion only and does not impart on our employers. We also do not provide legal advice. We recommend that you discuss with an attorney before you move with any IP transaction. Good afternoon, attorney counsel Coffey.
Good afternoon, counsel. How are you?
I'm doing well, counsel. Today again, we had to shift to an afternoon to accommodate for different schedules, and hopefully one day we'll come back to the IP breakfast. We hope that our audience, when they hear this, is over breakfast.
Well, we certainly hope so. And we welcome everyone from around the world, wherever you may be listening and at whatever time you may be listening. Hopefully, you're having coffee at the time you're listening.
So, counsel, obviously, we've been talking about intellectual property. We went to some of the basics of intellectual property with the people. And today we wanted to expand and talk about technology as a whole and how prevalent technology is affecting and will continue to affect our lives. And also in a global scheme of things, how technology will in the future dictate dictate leadership in the world in terms of who's going to be leading the 21st century in technology. And thus,
well said, counsel, well said. And as you speak, I was thinking, it came to my mind that as a civilization, as a human civilization, we went through different ages. Like there was the Ice Age, there was the agricultural times, there was the Industrial Age. There were different ages, right, throughout civilization. And today we are in the Information Age.
Yes,
digital Information Age.
Yes, and obviously America had played a very big role in this age in coming with the inventions in computers and putting the first PC on somebody's desk, the DARPA project that started the internet, and so there's a lot of improvement that were made, and the world that as we know it today had pretty much been Western we could say, frankly, the United States leadership in technology.
Correct. We could say the U.S. leadership in technology. And today, though, this episode is really inspired by some articles that all over people have been comparing the U.S. versus the next economy in the world in terms of technology leadership. Who's going to lead the world technologically, and whoever leads the world technologically will really have the power that comes with it.
Yeah, and of course we know with the advent of the computer and how much economic benefits that had brought to the United States, the creation of many jobs. were created, and a whole economy was developed around that, the internet. You know, we're talking about the social media, we're talking about e-commerce, which as we live today in this COVID era, where we see all the big blocks, the big brick and mortar stores to make way for the e-commerce of the world. Mainly, we can talk about Amazon, for example, which is, there are other e-commerce that's doing well as well. But, you know, 20 years ago, if we said that there would be a company selling products just online, and to be the leader, it would be unheard of. But with this COVID, you can see that's happening, and that's all due to the internet, which was a technology, a U.S. technology. Now, how do we in the United States keep up that leadership in the world? In technology, what do you think?
That's the $64,000 question, because again, if we take a look today, of all the top companies, the top tech companies in the world, in terms of market valuation, we see that Microsoft tops the list as number one, and as you just mentioned, you see Amazon.com as number two, Apple number three, Alphabet, or the parent company of Google, is number four, Facebook number five, and then comes Alibaba, which is a Chinese corporation, and also Tencent. After Tencent, you have Cisco Systems with the WebEx technology, and Samsung. We all know of Samsung Electronics, a Korean corporation. And last is Intel, or I should say, in terms of market cap, tech companies. So that's where, in terms of tech companies, that's where it stands right now as we speak, based on this article from, I believe it's
Bloomberg, yeah.
Bloomberg.
And it's interesting to see that the amount of money, the capitalization of these companies, like in Microsoft, is in the trillions of dollars. That is bigger than the GDP of some countries, right?
That's right. Not just one country; you can combine many countries.
Yeah. So these companies are huge, but they are technology companies. What's fascinating about this data is that although only four of the companies are foreign companies, but is that the speed that these companies are moving up as well, which is important. So it should not be underestimated that in the few years that comes, that more foreign companies can actually replace some of these household names that we know in the U.S.
Council, we should also, because we know that there are many startups and small business solo inventors may be listening to us, that they are not intimidated by Microsoft with over $1 trillion capitalization. Because if you remember where Microsoft started, those of us who are old enough to remember when Microsoft started with the disk operating system. Okay, it was a very small.
And that's the key, Council. The key is for a small guy to take advantage of a new technology and move up. I don't know if you noticed that the big guy that Microsoft knocked out is not in the list, right? I mean, if we look at IBM, for example, which would, in the 70s or even early 80s, you would think that IBM would always own a spot when it comes to technology in the top 10. IBM did not make that list. But Microsoft did, because they take advantage of a new technology and innovate to a point where they can lead the future. Because and talking about that, I think that's the fear, is that these companies that are on the list today, they may make the same mistakes as the older companies, wherein they don't innovate enough, they don't invest enough in technology, they don't invest enough in people in such a way that they lead in the new technologies that is to come, right?
Right. And speaking of making mistakes and all, including wrong bets, like you mentioned, IBM at the time didn't want to bet on software. IBM said it was hardware that will lead. And that's why they rejected his offer in terms of Bill Gates. And he went on to, as we all now know, to have now the top software corporation, because IBM at the time believed that it was hardware. They didn't want to believe in this thing called software. And was it called software at the time? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But there, you know, sometimes there's a thinking that you do that, and companies can do that. That you know, they know their business the way it is, and they don't want to change it, and they think it's always going to be that way. Amazon started as an online bookstore, right? Not only it pretty much closed all the bookstores, but Amazon became one of the, you know, biggest seller of everything now. It's the biggest company in e-commerce that's out there, maybe followed by Alibaba or AliExpress. The Macy's of the world, the JCPenney's of the world, all these other merchants in the world felt that, oh, people would always appreciate to come and get their product in the store, to experience, touch, to feel, and fail to see the changes in the world, that people were becoming more and spontaneous. They wanted their stuff now, and they didn't have time to go and, you know, that, you know, they, people don't have time to go to the mall anymore. They don't have time to go shop, and they just want this stuff right in front of their door, which Amazon says, fine, I'll give it to you. I'll get it to you as quick as possible, 24 hours. And now they're trying to do a daily delivery. And that's why they are number one. So the innovators of the world, in whatever technology, the innovators of the world seems to always lead. And that's the question of the day, is whether America as a whole, will we be innovators enough to be the leaders?
Now, speaking of innovators, what are the top 3 to 5 technologies that you think will lead in the next 5 years?
Well, I mean, there's so many, but when you look at, you know, AI, right? Artificial intelligence is something that's coming, and while many people are already experimenting with AI and they don't even know that AI is getting into their lives, right? I mean, for me, for example, I have an Alexa, and I can give Alexa commands. I can ask Alexa, call Emmanuel Coffee.
And
Coffee's mobile.
And Alexa is actually calling Emmanuel's Coffee's mobile. This is Alexa calling you right now.
Without.
Yeah, and I can say, Alexa, stop. So Alexa will take comment from you and execute that comment. There are robots that actually, Roomba, I think, has a robot that cleans your house. It keeps going around and it's smart enough to know it's running out of power, and it goes back to the power station and charge itself. So it'll keep going around and pick up the little dust that you leave behind. So this is a technology that people will see in coming. Obviously 5G you know, the phone that that you have right now, it's going to be obsolete in the next 3 to 5 years. I would say even less time than that. Everybody will want 5G technology. And unfortunately, I want to announce to you that the five top companies in 5G are not U.S. companies. Let me cite the first three. You have Huawei that has a 29% penetration. Mm-hmm. 25. You have Ericsson. You have Nokia. Those are not U.S. companies. And U.S. technology, you know, 5G is going to be the future. It's already here. You can hear it in all the commercials that every telephone company is saying that they have 5G. So in order to have 5G, you're going to have to need the 5G technology. And who owns those technologies? Is it companies in the U.S., companies outside? And that's going to set, you know, whether we lead in these areas.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. And in terms of that, in terms of 5G and wireless technology, who has the edge in terms of users, in terms of which, since you say those corporations are not, to begin with, are not even U.S. corporations, but what about users, wireless users?
You know, right now, in terms of wireless users, we basically cannot even compete. We have less than 500 million users as of 2018, wireless users. When if you compare that to China, they have 1.5 billion users.
Wow, 1.5 billion.
Okay, so. You know, being able to you know, obviously we all use a handheld device right now, and we know how convenient that is. You can receive your phone call, you can do banking transaction, you can trade stocks, you can buy something. And the more people that in your society that is able to do that, the more that the more your economy can actually move. Obviously, you know, when we do talk China and the United States, China already has the advantage of having billions of people, and we only have 320 or 330 million people in the U.S. So that's always going to be a big difference there, right? But giving these two countries are the way they actually work is that China is actually very secluded in terms of how business can penetrate in their market. They pretty much, I would say, copycat or pretty much mimic the same models. Like we have Amazon here, they have Alibaba or AliExpress. We have Facebook, they have Tencent, right? So they don't, instead of having Facebook allowing Facebook to compete in their market, they created their own network, right? We have WhatsApp here.
TikTok.
TikTok is an interesting thing. We can talk about TikTok for a little bit too. But the one that I was thinking about is the name escaped me, Council.
Oh, that's okay. Because this is one thing I wanted.
They have WeChat. WeChat.
Oh, okay.
WeChat is what they use.
But what do you think, though? Is U.S. Doing anything in terms of any initiatives to close the gap or to keep the leadership? Or what is going on here?
Well, I mean, I would think the U.S. is thinking about it. I think Congress has asked the U.S. Patent Office to look into the role of women or the lack of minorities in the IP space, and to report on how many are taking advantage and why they're not taking advantage, what are the stumbling blocks, what are the hurdles and stuff. But it all boils down to whether what I say, and I think we've both mentioned that in the program, is that are we firing all 6 or 12 cylinders, or how many cylinders we have? Are we giving each of the cylinders fuel to be able to be fired up at all the fuels? And what I would say is that if we look at the venture capitalist money invested, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of time, there's money is needed in these things, right? In any initiative, you have to put your money. It's like, you know, if you believe in something, put your money where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think U.S. is actually putting enough money in that in innovation. And when they do, they actually do it maybe to a certain groups that are favored, and they're not firing on all cylinders, right? And also the amount of money and you know how fast. If you look at the investment in venture capital investment in the U.S., it's you know back in 2009 it was way above China, right? And then it kind of stayed flat. In 2013, while the U.S. went up, but China is like this, they're going to a very steep slope in how mm-hmm. the money is investing. And by 2018, they were pretty much on par. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised on today's data that China is actually outspending the U.S., in capital investment in technology. And that's alarming, because if they are actually spending more money, they will actually get more of the results. I mean the US had led, it was because of you know, adopting innovation and being access to capital. If people don't have access to capital, they can't really get to where they want to go. And if China is outspending us, thus, you know, I think they'll have a chance to come up and not only capitalize on the next technologies, which is, you know, AI, 5G, quantum, you know, there are many nanotechnology. There's a lot of technologies that is ripe that people will be taking benefits from in the next 10 years. When we talk about nanotechnology, this is fascinating stuff where we,
right,
you know, where you're talking about maybe a small robot going inside your body to, you know, to take out a blood clot, for example. So you can have this little machine, doesn't look like a machine, it's microscopic to you, but it goes into your bloodstream to actually do a particular job that it was told to do. And you know, for these things, for us to be leaders in these things, money have to be invested.
Right. And to when you, I like my nanotechnology, like you said, also making materials light enough so you can have an airplane and that is that doesn't weigh as much, and so therefore a lot more effective. And it permeates the entire human endeavor in terms of how it can help or how it can ameliorate, it can make better the tools that we use today. Yes, well said.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, so I'm optimistic of our continuous leadership in technology and in IP. When I say our, I'm talking about the United States. However, there's got to be some studies done and initiatives taken to mend the gap, the disparity between the different demographics that are not able to participate. And therefore, that's why I call about the all cylinders. if there are demographics that cannot participate in this endeavor, therefore you're actually going to lose the benefit that these people could bring in, the innovation that they could bring in. And while we're competing with other countries, if they are investing in, and usually don't have an issue in demographics, right? I mean, China is pretty monolithic when it comes to race, right? So there's not a race issue. I don't know if they have, they may have the same issues regarding men and women, though. However, if they just outpace us in investment in any technology, it would put us at a disadvantage.
Yeah, our last episode, we really we went deep into this 2018 report to Congress regarding the different demographics, and hopefully the following episode will have other people to continue on that, discussing that subject in terms of getting all cylinders to be firing. But I know time is really, we're having, when we are at the breakfast, time goes by fast. But what about one segment or one sector which is very important to all types and sorts of technology is the sector of silicon in terms of chip making. Well, how is China versus U.S. in that area?
Let me see if I have some data on that. U.S. actually is doing pretty well in term of silicon development. I think when it comes to Intel is doing extremely well. We have a lot of companies in the memory space that are doing extremely well. But the Chinese are learning very quickly, and also with IP issues in China, a lot of things are copied. There's a lot of violation of IP in China, and that's a whole other subject that we shouldn't start at the last 5 minutes of the breakfast, because there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on there. We should look into talking about intellectual property enforcement in China, in particular. There was a time where they said, when a Windows come out, all the Chinese needs is one copy. So that there's a lot of, but at the same time, to be fair, I think there's a lot of improvement in IP enforcement as a regime over there, with the U.S. leading that. They have the IP attaches that are in different countries now, that are kind of working with those countries to enforce intellectual property, and it's to the benefit of both countries, or when we talk to China and United States. But it is to the interest of every country to have a strong IP regime and an IP enforcement that actually works to protect inventors of innovators or property owners in that space.
Well, I guess today we also wanted to, speaking of IP and owners, IP owners, we were going to take a look at the different aspect or the structure of how you get your patent in the U.S. However, time does not allow us. Hopefully, we can devote another episode so where we can talk to our audience regarding the different steps. We did talk about examination, but then we need to talk about how you monetize your patent, and once you you get your patent? How do you get your patent? What happens if someone is ever infringing? We went briefly over those, but today we were hoping to take a closer look at that, but time does not permit us.
No, and there's so many things that we need to talk about, and that's why I like this program. We created it to talk about the different issues. 30 minutes barely does us justice a week to talk about it, but there's a lot going on in the biotech industry regarding COVID. The U.S. is actually they are firing all cylinders. The government has put money to support innovation in that space. Even USPTO is involved in advancing this race for vaccine. And I know a lot of many countries are involved. I think this week Russia started a human trial that they think is they pretty much, they said they're pretty advanced. Some people are skeptical about it. In the U.S., we are still in experimental phases, and I think they're also in human trial phases. There's DNA type of vaccine that people are talking about and raising a lot of eyebrows on whether that is work. Plus the conspiracies council. We have to talk about the conspiracies as well, because there's a lot of people believe that Bill Gates is in cahoots with the world powers to actually put a chip.
And Fauci.
so we're all gonna have this chip now, and we can be controlled. So there's a lot going on, council, in terms of IP. For us to discuss with our audience, and we hope that they enjoyed this breakfast. And obviously during the week, if while they're listening to it, if they want to contact me, I am on Twitter at @ADECADY. Council, where can they find you?
At Coffee Law LLC, COFFY LLC. Coffee Law, COFFY LAW LLC. And until next time, be well.
Bye-bye now. Good afternoon, world. Welcome to another episode of the IP Breakfast with attorneys Albert DeCady and Emmanuel Coffey. Let's start with a disclaimer. Every opinion that we express in this program is our opinion only and does not impart on our employers. We also do not provide legal advice. We recommend that you discuss with an attorney before you move with any IP transaction. Good afternoon, Attorney Counsel Coffey.
Good afternoon, Counsel. How are you?
I'm doing well, Counsel. Today, again, we had to shift to an afternoon to accommodate for different schedules. And hopefully one day we'll come back to the IP breakfast. We hope that our audience, when they hear this, is over breakfast.
Well, we certainly hope so, and we welcome everyone from around the world, wherever you may be listening, and at whatever time you may be listening. Hopefully, you're having coffee at the time you're listening.
So, counsel, obviously, we've been talking about intellectual property. We went to some of the basics of intellectual property with the people, and today we wanted to expand and talk about technology as a whole and how prevalent technology is affecting and will continue to affect our lives. And also in a global scheme of things, how technology will in the future dictate dictate leadership in the world in terms of who's going to be leading the 21st century in technology. And thus,
well said, counsel. Well said. And as you speak, I was thinking, it came to my mind that as a civilization, as a human civilization, we went through different ages. Like there was the Ice Age, there was the agricultural times, there was the industrial age. There were different ages, right, throughout civilization. And today we are in the information age.
Yes,
digital information age.
Yes, and obviously America had played a very big role in this age in coming with the inventions in computers and putting the first PC on somebody's desk, you know, the DARPA project that started the internet, and so there's a lot of improvement that were made, and the world that as we know it today had pretty much been you know, Western and we could say, frankly, you know, the United States leadership in technology.
Correct. We could say the U.S. leadership in technology. And today, though, this episode is really inspired by some articles that all over people have been comparing the U.S. versus the next economy in the world in terms of technology leadership. Who's going to lead the world technologically, and whoever leads the world technologically will really have the power that comes with it.
Yeah, and of course we know with the advent of the computer and how much economic benefits that had brought to the United States, the creation of many jobs were created, and a whole economy was developed around that, the internet. You know, we're talking about the social media, we're talking about e-commerce, which as we live today in this COVID era, where we see all the big blocks, the big brick and mortar stores to make way for the e-commerce of the world. Mainly, we can talk about Amazon, for example, which is, there are other e-commerce that's doing well as well. But, you know, 20 years ago, if we said that there would be a company selling products just online and to be the leader, it would be unheard of. But with this COVID, you can see that's happening, and that's all due to the internet, which was a technology, U.S. technology. Now, how do we in the United States keep up that leadership in the world in technology? What do you think?
That's the $64,000 question, because again, if we take a look today, of all the top companies, the top tech companies in the world, in terms of market valuation, we see that Microsoft tops the list as number one. And as you just mentioned, you see Amazon.com as number two, Apple number three, Alphabet, or the parent company of Google, is number four, Facebook number five, and then comes Alibaba, which is a Chinese corporation, and also Tencent. After Tencent, you have Cisco Systems with the WebEx technology, and Samsung. We all know of Samsung Electronics, Korean corporations, and last is Intel, or I should say, in terms of market cap, tech companies. So that's where, in terms of tech companies, that's where it stands right now as we speak, based on this article from I believe it's
Bloomberg, yeah.
Bloomberg.
And it's interesting to see that the amount of money, the capitalization of these companies, like in Microsoft is in the trillions of dollars. That is bigger than the GDP of some countries, right?
That's right. Not just one country, you can combine many countries.
Yeah, so these companies are huge, but they are technology companies. What's fascinating about this data is that, although only four of the companies are foreign companies, but is that the speed that these companies are moving up as well, which is important. So it should not be underestimated that in the few years that comes, that more foreign companies can actually replace some of these household names that we know in the U.S.
Council, we should also, because we know that there are many startups and small business solo inventors may be listening to us, that they are not intimidated by Microsoft with over $1 trillion capitalization. Because if you remember where Microsoft started, those of us who are old enough to remember when Microsoft started with the disk operating system. Okay, it was a very small.
And that's the key, Council. The key is for a small guy to take advantage of a new technology and move up. I don't know if you noticed that the big guy that Microsoft knocked out is not in the list, right? I mean, if we look at IBM, for example, which would, in the 70s or even early 80s, you would think that IBM would always own a spot when it comes to technology in the top 10. IBM did not make that list, but Microsoft did, because they take advantage of a new technology and innovate to a point where they can lead the future. Because and talking about that, I think that's the fear, is that these companies that are on the list today, they may make the same mistakes as the older companies, wherein they don't innovate enough, they don't invest enough in technology, they don't invest enough in people in such a way that they lead in the new technologies that is to come, right?
Right. And speaking of making mistakes and all, including wrong bets, like you mentioned, IBM at the time didn't want to bet on software. IBM said it was hardware that will lead. And that's why they rejected his offer in terms of Bill Gates, and he went on to, as we all now know, to have now the top software corporation, because IBM at the time believed that it was hardware. They didn't want to believe in this thing called software. And was it called software at the time? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But sometimes there's a thinking that you do that, and companies can do that. They know their business the way it is, and they don't want to change it. And they think it's always going to be that way. Amazon started as an online bookstore, right? Not only it pretty much closed all the bookstores, but Amazon became one of the biggest seller of everything now. It's the biggest company in e-commerce that's out there, maybe followed by Alibaba or AliExpress. The Macy's of the world, the JCPenney's of the world, all these other merchants in the world felt that, oh, people would always appreciate to come and get their product in the store, to experience, touch, to feel, and fail to see the changes in the world, that people were becoming more and spontaneous. They wanted their stuff now, and they didn't have time to go and people don't have time to go to the mall anymore. They don't have time to go shop, and they just want this stuff right in front of their door, which Amazon says, fine, I'll give it to you. I'll get it to you as quick as possible, 24 hours. And now they're trying to do a daily delivery. And that's why they are number one. So the innovators of the world, in whatever technology, the innovators of the world seems to always lead. And that's the question of the day, is whether America as a whole, will we be innovators enough to be the leaders?
Now, speaking of innovators, what are the top 3 to 5 technologies that you think will lead in the next 5 years?
Well, I mean, there's so many, but when you look at, you know, AI, right? Artificial intelligence is something that's coming, while many people are already experimenting with AI and they don't even know that AI is getting into their lives, right? I mean, for me, for example, I have an Alexa, and I can give Alexa commands. I can ask Alexa, call Emmanuel Coffee.
And
Coffee's mobile.
And Alexa is actually calling Emmanuel's Coffee's mobile. This is Alexa calling you right now. And I can say, Alexa, stop. So Alexa will take comment from you and execute that comment. There are robots that actually, Roomba, I think, has a robot that cleans your house. It keeps going around and it's smart enough to know it's running out of power and it goes back to the power station and charges itself. So it'll keep going around and pick up the little dust that you leave behind. So this is a technology that people will see in coming. Obviously, 5G, the phone that you have right now, it's going to be obsolete in the next 3 to 5 years. I would say even less time than that. Everybody will want 5G technology. And unfortunately, I want to announce to you that the 5 top companies in 5G are not U.S. companies. Let me cite the first 3. You have Huawei, that has a 29% penetration. Mm-hmm. 25. You have Ericsson, you have Nokia. Those are not U.S. companies. And U.S. technology, 5G is going to be the future. It's already here. You can hear it in all the commercials that every telephone company is saying that they have 5G. So in order to have 5G, you're going to have to need the 5G technology. And who owns those technologies? Is it companies in the U.S., companies outside? And that's going to set, whether we lead in these areas.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. And in terms of 5G and wireless technology, who has the edge in terms of users, in terms of which, since you say those corporations are not, to begin with, are not even U.S. corporations, but what about users, wireless users?
Right now, in terms of wireless users, we basically cannot even compete. We have less than 500 million users as of 2018, wireless users, wherein if you compare that to China, they have 1.5 billion users.
Wow, 1.5 billion.
Billion. Okay, so, being able to obviously we all use a handheld device right now, and we know how convenient that is. You can receive your phone call. You can do banking transaction. You can trade stocks. You can buy something. And the more people that in your society that is able to do that, the more that the more your economy can actually move. Obviously, when we do talk, China and the United States. China already has the advantage of having billions of people, and we only have 320 or 330 million people in the U.S. So that's always going to be a big difference there, right? But giving these two countries our the way they actually work is that China is actually very secluded in terms of how business can penetrate in their market. They pretty much, I would say, copycat or pretty much mimic the same models. Like we have Amazon here, they have Alibaba or AliExpress. We have Facebook, they have Tencent. Right, so they don't. Instead of having Facebook allowing Facebook to compete in their market, they created their own network. Right, we have WhatsApp here.
TikTok.
TikTok is an interesting thing. We can talk about TikTok for a little bit too. But the one that I was thinking about is the name escaped me, Council.
Oh, that's okay, because this is one thing I wanted.
They have WeChat. WeChat.
Oh, okay.
WeChat is what they use.
But what do you think, though? Is U.S. Doing anything in terms of any initiatives to close the gap or to keep the leadership? Or what is going on here?
Well, I mean, I would think the U.S. is thinking about it. I think Congress has asked the U.S. Patent Office to look into the role of women. Or the lack of minorities in the IP space, and to report on how many are taking advantage and why they're not taking advantage. What are the stumbling blocks? What are the hurdles and stuff? But it all boils down to whether what I say, and I think we've both mentioned that in the program, is that are we firing all six or 12 cylinders, or how many cylinders we have, are we giving each of the cylinders fuel to be able to be fired up at all the fuels? And what I would say is that if we look at the venture capitalist money invested, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of time there's money is needed in these things, right? In any initiative, you have to put your money. It's like, you know, if you believe in something, put your money where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think U.S. is actually putting enough money in that in innovation. And when they do, they actually do it maybe to a certain groups that are favored, and they're not firing on all cylinders, right? And also the amount of money and how fast. If you look at the investment in venture capital investment in the U.S., it's back in 2009 it was way above China, right? And then it kind of stayed flat in 2013. While the U.S. went up, but China is like this. They're going to a very steep slope in how mm-hmm. the money is investing. And by 2018, they were pretty much on par. And, I wouldn't be surprised on 2 days later that China is actually outspending the U.S. in capital investment in technology. And that's alarming, because if they are actually spending more money, they will actually get more of the results. I mean, the U.S. had led. It was because of adapting innovation and being access to capital. If people don't have access to capital, they can't really get to where they want to go. And if China is outspending us, thus, I think they'll have a chance to to come up and not only capitalize on the next technologies, which is, you know, AI, 5G, quantum, you know, there are many nanotechnology. There's a lot of technologies that is ripe that people will be taking benefits from in the next 10 years. When we talk about nanotechnology, this is a, this is fascinating stuff where we,
right,
you know, where you are talking about maybe a small robot going inside your body to, you know, to take out a blood clot, for example. So you can have this little machine, doesn't look like a machine. It's microscopic to you, but it goes into your bloodstream to actually do a particular job that it was told to do. And you know, for these things, for us to be leaders in these things, money have to be invested.
Right, and to when you I like my nanotechnology, like you said, also making materials light enough so you can have an airplane, and that is that doesn't weigh as much, and so therefore a lot more effective. And it permeates the entire human endeavor in terms of how it can help or how it can ameliorate, it can make better the tools that we today that we use today. Yes, well said.
Yeah, I mean it's you know, so I'm optimistic of our continuous leadership in technology and in IP. When I say our, I'm talking about the United States. However, there's got to be some studies done and initiatives taken to mend the gap, the disparity between the different demographics that are not able to participate. And therefore, that's why I call about the all cylinders. If there are demographics that cannot participate in this endeavor, therefore you actually going to you're going to lose the benefit that these people could bring in, the innovation that they could bring in. And while we're competing with other countries, if they are investing in, and usually don't have an issue in demographics, right? I mean, China is pretty monolithic when it comes to race, right? So there's not a race issue. I don't know if they have, they may have the same issues regarding men and women, though. However, if they just outpace us in investment in any technology, it would put us at a disadvantage.
Yeah, our last episode, we really we went deep into this 2018 report to Congress regarding the different demographics, and hopefully the following episode will have other people to continue on that, discussing that subject in terms of getting all cylinders to be firing. But I know time is really... we're having when we are at the breakfast, time goes by fast. But what about one segment or one sector which is very important to all types and sorts of technology is the sector of silicon in terms of chip making? Well, how is China versus US in that area?
I don't, let me see if I have some data on that. US actually is doing pretty well in term of silicon development. I think you know, when it comes to like Intel is doing extremely well. We have a lot of companies in the memory space that are doing extremely well. But the Chinese are learning very quickly, and also with IP issues in China, a lot of things are copied. There's a lot of violation of IP in China, and that's a whole other subject that we shouldn't start at the last 5 minutes of the breakfast, because there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on there. We should look into talking about intellectual property enforcement in China, in particular. There was a time where they said, when a Windows come out, all the Chinese needs is one copy. So there's a lot of, but at the same time, to be fair, I think there's a lot of improvement in IP enforcement as a regime over there, with the U.S. leading that. They have the IP attaches that are in different countries now, that are kind of like, working with those countries to enforce intellectual property, and it's to the benefit of both countries, or when we talk to China and United States. But it is to the interest of every country to have a strong IP regime and an IP enforcement that actually works to protect inventors of innovators or property owners in that space.
Well, I guess today we also wanted to, speaking of IP and owners, IP owners, we were going to take a look at the different aspect or the structure of how you get your patent in the U.S. However, time does not allow us. Hopefully, we can devote another episode so where we can talk to our audience regarding the different steps. We did talk about examination, but then we need to talk about how you monetize your patent, and once you get your patent, how do you get your patent? What happens if someone is ever infringing? We went briefly over those, but today we were hoping to take a closer look at that, but time does not permit us.
No, and there's so many things that we need to talk about, and that's why I like this program. We created it to talk about the different issues. 30 minutes barely does us justice a week to talk about it, but there's a lot going on in the biotech industry regarding COVID. The U.S. is actually they are firing all cylinders. The government has put money to support innovation in that space. Even USPTO is involved in advancing this fight, this race for vaccine. And I know a lot of many countries are involved. I think this week Russia started a human trial that they think so they said they're pretty advanced. Some people are skeptical about it. In the U.S., we are still in experimental phases, and I think they're also in human trial phases. There's DNA type of vaccine that people are talking about and raising a lot of eyebrows on whether that is work. Plus the conspiracies council. We have to talk about the conspiracies as well, because there's a lot of people believe that Bill Gates is in cahoots with the world powers to actually put a chip.
And Fauci.
so we're all gonna have this chip now, and we can be controlled. So so there's a lot going on, council, in terms of IP. For us to discuss with our audience, and we hope that they enjoyed this breakfast. And obviously during the week, if while they're listening to it, if they want to contact me, I am on Twitter at @ADECADY. Council, where can they find you?
At Coffee Law LLC, COFFY LLC. Coffee Law, COFFY LAW LLC. And until next time, be well.
Bye-bye now.